A biography in 5 short chapters. Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. Takes me forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. It's not my fault. Still, it takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk, and I see it's there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It's my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. And I think so. I think that's so true of so much when we want to stop a habit of one sort or another. It certainly expresses in the beginning the denial that I certainly know I had tremendously about alcohol and smoking. Doctor once told me in my 20s, if I kept on smoking, I would probably either get lung cancer or die very soon. And I thought, I'm only 20 years old. I kept on smoking. I'm here, but I had a lot of other complications. But it's amazing how we don't see what we don't want to see, right? So here we are, 2012, I think it's 2 days, and I keep hearing still, you know, people saying, oh, Happy New Year, Happy New Year. We all want to be happy. I think most of us want to be happy. And yet in the quest for this elusive state of mind, this kind of elusive state of being, something we want so much, it's kind of astonishing when you think of it, how we can create pain, fear, hurt, and harm in the name of happiness. How does this happen? And I think spiritual paths, certainly the Buddha and Bill W., converge on the truth, capital T, capital T, even if the language is different. Both Bill W. and the Buddha addressed addiction in different forms, and both addressed self-will run riot, as in the 5 chapters, or chapter 1, 2, 3, right? And both address opening to happiness. It's right there. Eastern or Western, it's all about seeking and trying to hold on to pleasure and avoid pain. And so much of what people do is run by this. Because invariably, when we run into something or try something, touch something that gives us pleasure, even momentarily, it's almost like a natural instinct. We get hooked into wanting to keep it, right? Wanting to grasp onto it. And it is so futile. I guess you've noticed that in your lives, or you wouldn't be here, you know? It's so futile because the truth is, and the Buddha taught this over and over again, everything is transitory. We are transitory. Everything. And when we're confronted with something that's uncomfortable, right? Pain, disappointment, ache, sorrow, it comes in so many ways. We find ourselves seduced by momentary fixes that will take it away, even for a moment. And again, it can lead so easily to addiction. So there's no blame here, it's just seeing the truth. Sooner or later, and I suspect that almost everybody here has had this at one point, we're confronted with the angst that comes from trying to hang on or trying to push something away. I know in my experience, no matter how hard I would try to hold or how hard I would try to push, I did not have the control. So a lot of what the spiritual path is about, how to live with the true fact of life. Things pass. It's not pessimistic. It's just true. It's just true. And although this is true of, I would say, almost everybody, especially in the West here, it is especially true with people with different forms of addiction, whether it's a behavioral or a substance. And I'm going to include, as I mentioned here earlier, the addiction to I, me, mine, because that is one that grabs us by the throat. Or I could say by the balls, but I don't. It's not polite. But grab it, it does. Mine. Me. I. How can this happen to me? That's mine. And although it's adorable when you see a 3-year-old who's just learned how to say mine. 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 So we learn very early. We don't learn ours that early, do we? I, me, mine. So when we finally see this process, the cause and the effect of this process of clinging, of hanging on, it cuts through the denial, and then we can start the process to turn it around. It doesn't go like that a lot of the time. Grasping, oh, so here's a wonderful quote by Goenka, who's a marvelous teacher. You know, I love when poets, teachers, authors say something so profound in like 8 words rather than 750, you know, pages. Grasping at things can yield only one of two results. Either the thing you're grasping at disappears, or you yourself disappear. It's only a matter of which occurs first. And many people have disappeared through some of the more flagrant addictions. Maybe some of you people know people who have died from the way they've consumed food or alcohol, drugs, because it's so hard to give up, right? So I looked up the term addiction. And it's used to describe, it says, a recurring compulsion by an individual to engage in some specific activity. Well, okay. And then it says, despite harmful consequences to the person's health, mental state, or social life. And nowadays, this is more often including something like cell phone addiction, which is really clobbering a lot of relationships and hurting a lot of people in the name of staying connected. So I was also then very moved because it means to devote or give oneself habitually or compulsively. And here's the eye-opener, which I didn't realize. I mean, I kind of knew that definition. I think we all did. But how about this one? The Latin addictus means given over, as one awarded to another as a slave. You think of yourself as a slave? I know when I was drinking and smoking, I was a slave to it. Oh, that brings tears to my eyes. The word slave, you know, so much of what we do now is we find it abhorrent that there's still slavery in different parts of the world and that our country was built on slavery in so many ways. And yet, we can so easily become a slave. So just watch some of your little habits and see, are you given over to it, right? So it seems very fitting as we start the year to start with the first step. And also the Four Noble Truths, the first of the Four Noble Truths, the principal teaching of the Buddha. So I suspect most of us here, I don't think we'd be here, right? Finally reached a point where we became willing to admit complete defeat. Not defeat about the whole wide world, but in whatever the specific instance is, and willing to acknowledge that a particular behavior or a particular substance just wasn't working. That's why I love that autobiography in 5 chapters. A little bit, in some way, it does show the process. The surrender can be the beginning of a new life, or I might say of life itself. I can't imagine I would be here at all if I hadn't stopped drinking and smoking. And I know I'm not the only one. Because this surrender brings us closer to some deep, deep spiritual truth, which is a willingness to start seeing things as they really are. Not as we want them to be, not as we would wish they were, but it is. And in life, it's sometimes very, very uncomfortable. Some really difficult things happen to us and around us in life. And even those, can we accept the truth of what these things are? So again, to admit that we're powerless, that our lives are unmanageable, has this built-in seeing clearly and being willing to give up the idea of how it should be. And you think about all the different ways we tried to hang on to whatever our addictive substance or behavior was. Well, I'll change this, or I won't eat or drink before this hour, and I won't do this, and I won't do this anymore. I'll just drink beer, and I won't drink beer anymore. It doesn't matter. When we're hooked, we're hooked. You know, when we're slaves. So when we become willing to surrender, it's only the beginning of taking responsibility for our lives. But without that beginning, it just makes circles. So I want to read something from a website that's 12step.org. God, there are so many resources available to us, so many resources. Step one is the first step to freedom. I admit to myself that something is seriously wrong. Something is not working. There's a mess going on in my life. I admit that I've been playing games with myself, and I'm losing the game. I see that my life has become unmanageable in many ways. It's not under my control anymore. I do things that I later regret doing and tell myself I will not do them again, but I do. I keep on doing them in spite of my regrets, my denials, my vows, my cover-ups, my facades. The addiction has become bigger than I am. The first step is to admit the truth of where I am. I am really powerless over this addiction and that I need help. In parentheses, even though I might not yet be willing to accept the help that's available. Okay. But this is the beginning. This is the beginning. And again, I say, this doesn't have to be only for whatever the addictive processes are in our life, but just watching some of our daily habits that might be causing us some confusion, some distress, or causing people around us some distress. Because we're not the only ones hurting when we're off on a tangent, right? You know, it's interesting. It's only the human species that finds ways to move away from discomfort in a way that it increases it many times over. Animals are smarter. Got to get away from something, they go. And they don't come back to see, do I really need to get away? They don't do that. So what a relief when we can finally wake up and see that it doesn't have to be this way. Maybe scary, but it doesn't have to be this way. Aeneas Nin, oh, she's so beautiful. She put it so beautifully. There came a time, oh, I love this. There came a time when the risk to remain tight in the bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. this step is the beginning of blossoming, right? Now, the Buddhist teachings on the Four Noble Truths are an expansion of this idea of willingness to see what's true and learning how to be present with what's true. And the Buddha taught over and over again that until we allowed ourselves to penetrate this truth, that life is, having a body and a mind brings with it certain things, we're going to have more and more suffering. And he said, I teach one thing and one thing only. Suffering, not like he's going to teach us how to suffer, but to see the suffering and the end of suffering. But then we have to be willing to walk the path. Our society really gets in the way because it tells us you just buy this, do this, sign up for that, and you'll be happy. And I think we've gotten caught in this kind of media, what's the word when somebody gets into your mind? There's a word. What? Brainwashing, thank you. And you know, the 12 steps and the Buddhist teachings are also brainwashing, but beautifully, beautifully washing away, you know, all the impediments that get in the way, not planting more impediments. Thank you for the help. I often lately need help with words. Now, the Buddha, although, and many of you know this, although he was raised in luxury, so it says, he realized that there had to be some answer, some way of dealing with life's sorrows, because life has sorrows with it. And so he devoted himself to looking into this and to penetrating the truth of how do we live with the inevitable disappointments in life? How do we do that? And is there a possibility that someone could find lasting happiness even though life could be difficult and painful? And he did. He found a way. And the question is, then, are we willing to walk the path? Same thing when we, oh, God, I need to stop drinking. I need to stop eating. I need to stop shooting up. I need to, oh, it's scary. But if you follow the path, we're all a testimony to this, right? It's awesome. I remember the first time I walked into an AA meeting and I saw people happy saying they weren't drinking. I didn't get it. And I said, it's okay, just keep coming back. Yeah, it was over 37 years ago. And just by following the path, we are this incredible example for other people. And it's the same thing with following some of the Buddhist teachings. If you hang around people who are working with it, oh, okay, I can do that. So his first sermon on the Four Noble Truths was about the discovery that he had. And this was very basically, he said, yes, there is suffering in this world. He called it dukkha. There's a cause. There's a way of stopping it, and here it is. There it is. And the First Noble Truth is about the universality of suffering, dukkha. So dukkha has many different meanings, like impermanence, dissatisfaction, right? Imperfect, subject to change, affliction. All of this comes in the word dukkha. So I'm going to use the word dukkha. And he said, when we have this body-mind, we are going to feel a certain amount of angst. Life is dukkha, is unsatisfactory. Things are constantly changing. Things that we want, we can't get. Things that we don't want, we can't get rid of. And even things that give us pleasure cause dukkha. Why? Because they'll inevitably disappear. And he said, and as you learn to just be with this truth and settle in, then you can live with it. There will be sickness. There will be loss of people that we love. There will be disappointment. There will be ultimately death of others and ourselves. How to live with it. And again, some people say, oh my God, that's so pessimistic. It's not. It's just true. And the same thing, like when we admitted the truth, we were powerless over alcohol, let us say, we got free. And the same thing, when we stop trying to make something change that we have no control over, we become free. It really works. And then the rest of the steps lead to lives that are, 12 steps lead to lives that are full and rich. They're of service, they're moral, and it's the same thing. Same thing with the Buddha's teachings. You know, as I said, when he said there's a cause to all this dukkha, it's grasping. That is the cause. So along with just the pain of life, we have the pain of grasping. And we can see it when we let go of whatever the addictive substance or behavior is or was. Wow. There's a freedom. How many times do you hear in program, have you heard yourself say, a freedom beyond my wildest dreams? So we're just dreaming in the wrong direction. We're dreaming to find ways that we can control it rather than, how do I be with life as it is? So I'm playing with both the 12 steps and the Buddha's teachings. And we can see, without looking too far, the patterns that we have of trying to grasp. Shopping, buying too much, eating too much. You know, but I'm not talking in an addictive way. Just getting caught. Getting caught in desire. Getting caught in desire. So, we can get so, we identify so strongly or solidly with the source of our pleasure, that it can seem like life without it is not possible. I can get so, nobody can take away my pen. You know, I need it to be happy. It's a story. Let it go. I can still be happy. But we get caught in that, you know. So the Buddha taught, as the program has taught us, that we are powerless over certain things. And I know for a lot of people it's really hard when you go to your first meeting or eighth meeting. Keep hearing about this powerless. Come on, that's not the way to live. But as the Buddha was saying in Bill W., we're not helpless. It's not like we're helpless. Nobody is taking that away from us. So we see the underlying symptoms, right, of both addiction and life, dukkha, in general, is denial. Denial, or we can call it ignorance. Just not wanting to see. I remember a time I was actually on a retreat, and it was a long retreat, and there was a man there, as very often happens on long retreats. I started to get spellbound by him. I didn't know him, I just got spellbound. But I would observe him a little bit, and something deep inside me said, Sandra, not good. But I was enjoying the feeling of being spellbound by some fantasy I was having about this person. That's what was causing me happiness. And after the retreat, we spent some time together. I couldn't wait to get away. Unfortunately, we didn't marry each other on the retreat. It would have been harder. But it's a joke, and yet it's not. We get spellbound, and we make some decisions that we don't even like. Change is not easy. It's not. We get caught in habit. I think we need to really recognize it, appreciate it, have compassion for it. So here's one of my favorite quotes, and many of you have heard me say this before. I think I may say it maybe 9 times a year, something like that. I'm not sure. But wow. W.H. Auden. We would rather be ruined than changed. We would rather die in our dread than climb the cross of the moment and watch our illusions die. Isn't that powerful? And I think those of us here in this room can really relate to it when we look back on whatever our history was. But also to keep in mind as we go forward that there may still be some things that we're hooked on. So the key element, of course, is surrender. And have you heard of, that the ego does not like to surrender, right? It's the me mind. So I want to read one little thing by Kevin Griffin in A Breath at a Time, which is a great book if any of you don't know it and want to take a look at it. He wrote, "Before we begin to realize our potential, we must break out of limiting concepts of who and what we are and what we think is possible." These limiting concepts of who and what we are and what we think is possible. Dare to be wider, bigger, more vast than your sense of self. It's just a construction, by the way, that sense of self. So, and we need to be willing to take a real honest look, not just at our addiction and the causes of it, but how we're living our lives. How we're living our lives now. What are we hanging on to? What are we refusing to let go of? How do we respond to adversity? And I've got one that I'm working with here now. It's exhausting, and that is I'm still eating in ways that do not help me live the kind of life I want. And that's something that I'm really working with, but I'm caught in a lot of ways. Do we blame or do we cave? Right? Where in our lives are we hiding something or insisting on having our own way? So now I'm getting into questions that are bigger than just a substance, right? Important. Where in my life, you might ask, am I just going under the radar? I want to keep it under the radar. What am I holding on to? What upsets me? What upsets you? And when you're upset, how do you react? How many times I hear people say, why is this happening to me? Sometimes it just happens, and sometimes take a look at your behavior and you'll get a clue, right? And what are the results in our life from our behaviors? So it's really about being willing to take a courageous look, a compassionate, courageous look at what our lives are like and how they got there. Karma, cause and effect. So first, we have to be aware. Until something gets our attention, we're blind, right? And this is where meditation is such a helpful process, because it's like going to a gym, right? A mental gym. We work the muscles. Like when our mind gets caught in something and we decide, okay, we bring the attention back to the breath, we're working a muscle of coming back, and not getting caught in all the blah, blah, blah that's going on in our minds. We also get to experience a sense of peace that we don't always have. Do you remember when we were talking, everybody was talking here, and then I struck the gong? What was that like? All of a sudden. Of course, it works in a couple of ways. There's a young woman, a very social young woman who lives across the hall from me, and she's a very loud social woman. And she has a lot of parties, and very often we have to have somebody call up around 11 o'clock, calm it down. It was so funny. So I saw her today. Hi, Happy New Year, blah, blah, blah. And I said, so what'd you do New Year's Eve? Oh my God, I had a blast, I had the greatest time. We went to this club, and then we went to another club. It was just fabulous. We were drinking and laughing. We had so much fun. And I said to myself, I think I shouldn't have asked her this question, because I knew she was going to say, and what did you do? Okay. So I gave her a very short answer about it, and she went, "Oh, wow. You didn't go to a club?" It's not about judging. It's about finding what works for you. I think at her age, going to a club is great, you know? I hope 40 years from now she's not still doing the same thing. But the silence. How many people, if I may ask, were here New Year's Eve? Oh, beautiful, yeah. The silence was so lovely. And many people came. People came who had never been here before. They just wanted something different. Oh. Now that doesn't mean we have to go on 2-year retreats. But to build in enough of this in the course of our day to just land once again and quiet the mind. Meditation helps us see our thoughts more clearly. And when you see your thoughts more clearly, you will be, as many of you have been already, taken aback by the sheer nonsense and repetition of stuff that doesn't make sense. But it's like when we were using, can't do anything about it till you see it. So meditation is really, really good, because once you see them, you can consciously decide what you want to do. I always like the image of me not being on a leash with my thoughts. Like my thoughts are, like when you see people walking dogs, and sometimes you can see the dogs, and they're getting pulled. I feel so often that's what thoughts do. But when I see it, I go, oh, there's a thought. I don't have to believe it because it's a thought. And with that, there is a surrender and of being able to see various things that have made my life unmanageable because I create them in a lot of ways. So in the next months, we're going to continue exploring the 12 steps and how the Buddha's teachings blend in, how they both together give us a path. And each of these paths, together or separately, if taken with some diligence, can really open us to a happiness we would not have imagined. And it's not the a happiness of having, becoming. It's like, oh, being. And there'll be with it, there comes with it a well-being and a strength and a courage that comes in times of difficulty, in times of difficulty. So in a way, we can say Bill W. awoke. He certainly woke up from his addiction to alcohol, and he and Bob and others put together this most amazing. Are we not lucky? I mean, what a blessing to have this program that is so wise and so doable, so practical. And thousands of years earlier, the Buddha awoke. Now, the word Buddha means awake. And in that sense, we can all become Buddhas. We have it within us. And it gives us guidance, if we follow it, on how to be free. Not only when we're really very happy and things are going our way, but in difficult times as well. When we admit that we are powerless over something specific, when we see that our lives have become manageable, we then have actually more power in our lives, and our lives can become much more fluid. So let's just sit for a moment. There are a lot of people here tonight. What I personally find, and it's not true of everybody, that when I speak and actually listen to what I'm saying, especially if someone also is listening to me, I sometimes hear things in a different way than just the blah up here. So I think it might be nice if you're all, if you want to, those who don't, of course, can just sit, to find a partner near you. And each person can talk for about 5 minutes about how this step works for you, or what this talk tonight might have brought up for you. Or is there something you're holding on to and you're struggling with letting go? Is there something you want to shift and change, and what will it take as you move forward? So you have a lot of latitude here, but all within the context of what we try to hold on to doesn't really work. Okay? So if each of you could take a partner. And before you do, I'll just say one more thing. Oh, just a second.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.